Welcome, passengers. This is the pre-boarding announcement for the podcast From the Runway Up. Today's flight will introduce you to the world of aviation in East Tennessee. So fasten your safety belts and return your tray tables to their upright position. And in 3, 2, 1.
Hello, From the Runway Up listeners. Thank you so much for tuning in to our July episode. I'm Caitlin, and I have Becky along with me today. And for our July episode, we took our podcast studio on the road, which we don't typically do.
That was interesting.
Yes, we learned a lot.
Yes.
But this episode, we are going to talk a little bit about military aviation.
At our airport, we share our runways with the Tennessee Air National Guard and the 134th Air Refueling Wing, and they have been great community partners for decades here at our facility. And our conversation is going to center around the volunteerism and the support of our community, as well as the type of aircraft that they have at the base that support their mission. It's a lot of good information about military operations and how that works with commercial service at an airport.
Yeah, and if you all have listened to any of our previous episodes, you know that we are in the actual largest construction project in airport history. And so they talk a little bit about our construction project as well, and how lengthening the runways will really help their mission too. So like Becky said, they are a great partner with us, and we hope that you will enjoy this interview that we had with them. Okay, so thank you all so much for letting us interview you for this month's podcast episode. Why don't we start by both of you just kind of introducing yourselves and your role here at the airbase?
Okay, I'm Colonel Tommy Cawthon. I'm the wing commander here at the 134th Air Refueling Wing. I've been a member of this wing for 34 years and been the wing commander for the last 7.
I'm Colonel Lee Hartley. I'm the vice wing commander. I've only been here for 21 years.
Short
timer.
been in this particular position for about 2 years now.
So what attracted you to serve? Because you both are longstanding servicemen. What attracted you to the armed services?
Well, when I first started thinking about military, it was 1979 when I'm getting out of high school. And 1979 was not a great time for the military on the heels of the Vietnam War, and it just wasn't really a popular thing to do. My dad was a member of this wing. He was a member of this wing from 1958 till 1983.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and then I got in 1984, so either he or I have been in this wing every year in its existence except 1957.
So, wow.
He bugged me to death about getting in the Guard. I mean, and I can still remember as a senior in high school, maybe freshman, in college, saying, "Dad, I am not joining the military. Leave me alone about it." And that was, 1980, 81, somewhere in there. And I joined in 1984, so I held out for another 2 or 3 years beyond that. But my dad served in the military, and he was trying to get me out here. He thought I might like flying airplanes and that sort of thing. And after being in college for a little bit, I said, "Tell me a little bit more about this thing in the Guard."
College, flying airplanes.
Yeah. So that's kind of how I got started. I mean, interestingly enough, I sit right here and I look out there. The F-86 that sits right outside of my office is the airplane my dad flew. That's what brought us from Georgia. He was at Moody Air Force Base on active duty. Came up here to interview with TVA, and that was first airplane. That was what he was flying on active duty. That's what we were flying here, and that's the airplane that brought my family to East Tennessee. Yeah.
And you get to look at it every
day.
I look at it every single day.
Yeah. What about you, Colonel Hartley?
So, born and raised here in East Tennessee, but when I was about 6 years old, we took a family vacation to visit some relatives in Texas, and along the way, went to an air show in Dallas, or in Fort Worth, actually, at Carswell Air Force Base at the time, and became just fascinated with airplanes. And so as it came time to graduate high school, I had some friends that had pursued the service academies, and the Air Force Academy in particular, and so that was kind of my route. I spent some time on active duty, but at my commissioning ceremony, the person that commissioned me was a member of the 134th Air Refueling Wing that had come to Colorado to begin my, no kidding, my commissioned career in 1991. And so I tell folks that the 134th has been a part of me longer than I've been a part of it.
Since day one.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow.
And you're an air show success story.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So there is some benefit to having an air show at an airport. Yes.
Well, that's debatable.
Depends on who you ask. Right.
Yes. Whether, it's a labor
whether,
of love.
Whether he's a success story.
That's right. There are those that would disagree.
I'm kidding.
Oh, I kid. All right.
Well, can you all talk a little bit about the history of the airbase here in Knoxville, Tennessee, and then the 134th?
Okay, well, the wing was an active duty wing in the early 50s, 1952, I believe. And basically their mission, they flew the F-86s. The one that you see out there in the airport, and they were basically flying air defense over the Oak Ridge area and some of the TVA dams. There was concern that airplanes could fly into those facilities and things like that, and they would do intercepts on aircraft that flew into those what we would call a temporary flight restricted area, today. But that's kind of how they got started. And then in 1957, the active duty moved out, basically just handed the keys over to the Guard, and the 134th Fighter Interceptor Group stood up, and we've been here ever since. We've flown F-86s to start with, then we flew the F-104. That was the hottest airplane in the United States Air Force, and back then the Guard didn't get the best stuff back then, so we were one of the units here that got some of the best aircraft that was in the Air Force inventory at the time, and the airplane that sort of put us on the map, so to speak, when we were deployed to Germany in 1961, and they set records for flying most aircraft flying at any time. They set all kinds of records that in the F-104 that were never broken, so that was a big deal to them, and it really showed that the Guard was not a second-rate organization. It was, they could be there and they could do what the active duty was doing and do it even better. So they came back from that deployment, had a brief time where they converted over to F-102s, and unfortunately we don't have one of those in the airpark over here, but we're looking for one. And then we moved into the air refueling business with the KC-97. That was about 1964. And flew various versions of the KC-97, and then in 1976 converted to the KC-135.
And that's the aircraft you have now. And for people who are not aviation enthusiasts, a refueler does what?
Our job is to refuel other aircraft in the sky. Our mission today in Air Mobility Command is rapid global mobility. So our job is to very quickly and within just a few days be able to get fighter airplanes, people, supplies, some beans, beds, and bullets over to the
fight. That's what we should call this podcast.
That's the title.
Yeah.
That's one, I stole that one from Major General Forster. He used to describe it as beans, beds, and bullets getting it to the fight. So that's our job, is to get all that stuff over the fight and get it there quickly. So rapid global mobility is a term that we use today. But and the fighters can't stop over the ocean. You know, we've got to get them across the ocean. They can't make it without refueling, so our job primarily is to get the fighter aircraft over to the fight, and then once we're there, then we'll set up refueling operations so that primarily, again, the fighters can go in and do their business, and then when they hit us before they strike, and then after they strike is typically how they do it, so that they can make it home. Okay. And then at the end of the war or whatever conflict, we got to get all that stuff back home. We get it over there, we support it while it's there, and then get it all back home. So
your unit stays engaged or deployed quite a bit because of the mission that you have as a resource. There aren't that many in our country, so you get called often to serve.
That's correct. So the Guard and Reserve own 60% of the air refueling capability in the United States Air Force. So the Air Force doesn't do anything without involving the Guard and Reserve. I think the Guard owns, Lee, correct me if I'm around 40 to 45%.
That's correct.
Of the assets, of the refueling assets. So we're integral to any contingency or conflict that happens around the globe.
Wow.
Well, and can you all talk a little bit about the actual aircraft, about the KC-135s?
Sure. The common question that I get is, how much fuel does it hold? So if you filled all the tanks up throughout the airplane, it's right at 30,000 gallons, which is quite a bit. Now, we don't usually, what we use on it on a daily basis or when we employ it is dependent upon several things, but mostly the requirements of the people that would take the gas, that we would offload
that you're refueling.
That we would refuel in there. And depending on how that is, you know, situated. So whether it's one aircraft that needs a lot at one particular time, or if it's something that we basically, we're kind of an orbiting gas station, if you will, that receives aircraft as they need it and service it. So depending on how that goes. And the other part of that is the operation location that we would be in depends on what it can sustain, because longer runways, you can get more fuel in the air, shorter runways, not so much. And then there's all the other things that affect what you can do with the performance of an airplane. So, but it is set, it's basically a Boeing 707 airframe. It's been outfitted several times over the years with different engines and aviation modifications and so forth, but the structure of the aircraft itself really hasn't changed throughout the years. And so been in existence itself since the mid-50s. And was one of the things that Boeing put together to go with the B-52 at the time. So those two were kind of made in concert with each other at a similar time and made to go together during, as the Cold War started heating up. And so from there, the Air Force adapted it for all the other things, because the one thing that's common with all the aircraft is that they need fuel.
Right. Yeah. And to do what y'all have described, it takes a lot of people to do that. And so our state's been really good at having volunteers to be a part of that. Do you find in recruitment of people to be a part of that, this is a good airport or area to do that with?
I would say we live in a place that is very unique. We get probably some of the best support that I hear about anywhere across the country, right here in East Tennessee. So we never have a problem recruiting people. We're one of a few units across the country, I think, that can really say that we do well on a consistent basis, and have historically been able to fill our billets and our ranks with just some outstanding men and women mostly from the local area. Now, we draw from surrounding states as well, but primarily right here in East Tennessee is where our population comes from.
Well, how many people are employed here at the base?
So the 134th has about 1,100 people in it, and then we also have the 119th Cyber Operations Squadron of about somewhere around 150 or so people. And then we have, of course, we have the Army Guard. I'm not sure exactly what their numbers are. What their numbers are, and we have the TEC staff that's here. All told, we could have, if everybody that worked here showed up, we could have somewhere around 1,800 people or so. And that's including state employees and all kinds of other BX employees, our club employees and things like that. So if everybody's here, it would be about 1,800 people. But as far as just the 134th, we're somewhere around 1,100 people.
Well, and with your mission and with that vast number of people who would be a part of this operation, you have a huge economic impact on the community. And I know you look at that sometimes. What is it about this base that it brings things to the community?
So roughly the economic impact between salaries and business that we bring in to support the operations here at the base, whether it's ongoing day-to-day operations or facility refurbishment and so forth, it's roughly $172 million a year. And that kind of varies up and down. So the math on that works out to just a little over $3 million a week is what we estimate that we bring in, or that's associated with the base in some form or fashion economically.
That's amazing. That's a huge regional effort and benefit to us to have the base here.
Well, you all talked a little bit about that your main mission at the 134th is refueling. Can you talk a little bit about some support missions that you've done in East Tennessee and other areas?
Right. So what makes us unique in the Guard is that's different from the Air Force and the Reserves is our state mission. So we have our federal mission and we have our state mission. So we've talked a lot about our federal mission, with regards to, you know, the refueling capabilities that we have. Well, there's a state mission, a Dom Ops type mission. You know, there's not a whole lot of use for air refueling. You know, if you got a flood or thing. And now we may use our airplanes to go evacuate people out or to provide supplies. The airplane's not really made for that much. I mean, we can do some of it, but usually your C-17s and C-130s and that kind of thing are used more for that kind of mission. So we've got, aside from our refueling capability, we've got a whole lot of support functions. We've got the medical group, we've got surgeons and physician's assistants and nurses and EMTs that can be used in a state mission. We've got our civil engineering. They can do rapid runway repair. So if you have an earthquake and you have damage there, they can go in and assist with bringing that runway back into operation. So supplies and so forth can be flown in. We've got, you know, we got a comm flight that can help with communications and setting up antennas. And, you know, one of the biggest problems in some of the domestic operations is being able to communicate. Well, they have a lot of capability there. So we have a lot of things around the base. Our aerial port folks can go out and help with loading C-17s and getting that load right, you know, and helicopter loading. They did some of that during the hurricanes last year, and being able to get supplies and so forth to the needed areas. So, Lee, I don't know if there's some other things that you can think of.
Some of the things some of the communication capabilities we helped out with during the fires up in Gatlinburg. Also did, civil engineers did some debris removal for some of the roads, not only up in Gatlinburg, but also down for after some of the tornadic activity in here in East Tennessee. For last year's hurricane season, we got hit with all the hurricanes in rapid succession. We sent several, they did a lot of the staging operations out of Savannah. So we sent some folks to Savannah to help with the loading and unloading of the cargo aircraft. And at the same time, sent some folks down to Puerto Rico to help with some of the services functions, feeding people out of a mobile kitchen that you might have to do, accountability of people that come into and out of that help the relief effort. So any of the, you can see that a lot of the functions that we have that require us to be ready to go to war work just hand in glove with domestic and disaster operations. And so I guess the bottom line is we're here and ready for all of it, given the phone call.
Day to day, we work for the governor of Tennessee through the adjutant general in the military department of Tennessee, and that would be for our state mission. So we work for the state of Tennessee and the governor of Tennessee through the our air tag and our tag. But if we're federalized, then we fall under Air Mobility Command. So for these domestic type operations, it would all be working for our adjutant general, the governor, and working in conjunction with TEMA and FEMA and other organizations to help Tennesseans. And like Lee said, our support functions work hand in glove. Their state mission and their federal mission that are very similar. Like I said, we're not doing a lot of refueling of airplanes for that, but there's a lot of the support functions that really get used in these domestic ops.
Well, we appreciate your time today. One last question before we wrap up our podcast. We've talked about our state and federal missions. Where do you see the Tennessee Air National Guard going in the future?
Well, a lot of the things are happening at McGee-Tyson. Jointly, the airport and the guard are extending the runway. Mm-hmm. And so that's going to do a lot, not only for us, it increases our mission capability here, just strictly speaking from an airplane stance, but hopefully brings extra capabilities to the local community as far as what capacity or what types of aircraft that the airport authority can handle as well. So that's kind of a win-win situation. Long term, it allows us, I think, to be considered for some future missions that may take a longer runway. For example, follow-on tanker for the Air Force is pursuing right now is the KC-46. It's a 767 variant. And one of the things that you need to be considered for that, or that you did when they first started fielding them, is a 10,000-foot runway. So that runway extension in itself helps us to be at least considered for that particular mission as they begin fielding it throughout the Air Force, Guard, and the Reserves. And then we're also locally here on the base about to break ground hopefully this fall on a new hangar. And so again, so the facilities that we're refurbishing and beginning and constructing not only help our current state, but where we could go in the future, sort of thing. So that I guess the big thing is that when we try and plan for the future, it's not just a what do we need right now, but we try and take a look to see what are the things that we can do that help on both fronts.
Yeah, and I'd say the relationship we had with the Airport Authority was integral to that.
Absolutely.
It was absolutely key to getting that the extension and the taxiway extension, because the Airport Authority was going to redo that runway, and because we have such a great relationship and talking with each other, things like doing the air show and a lot of other things that we've done.
This podcast.
Yeah. Great example.
Yeah.
But, so we were able to with that working relationship, we were able to know ahead, way in advance it was going to happen. We've done a lot of work. We have an alert mission here that sometimes we may need to use the other side of the runway. We've got a great relationship with them for parking space over there in case we need to get closer to the runway. We had, we were able to take this opportunity, work with the Guard Bureau, and we put in about $6.75 million towards the extension and the overrun and unrun hardings that we would get the 10,000 foot runway. So it was a timing issue. If we had waited till the airport had finished the runway and then said, hey, how about we extend it? There's not a chance
that
it'll happen. So because we knew ahead of time that this was going to happen, we were able to coordinate with the Guard Bureau and say, hey, can we get this taxiway extended and get funnel some money to get it out to 10,000 feet, which really helps us.
Right.
But then it may also end up helping the airport, mm-hmm. Maybe to get some larger aircraft to come in and maybe perhaps get some international flights and that sort of thing.
That's one of the benefits of being a shared use facility, meaning that we have military and commercial operations at the same place. And if any of our listeners have been following along with this on our podcast, there are episodes that talk about this runway project from an engineering perspective, from a progress perspective. We call it the Airfield Modernization Program. So if you haven't listened to those, you might want to go back and download those podcasts as well to learn more about the project that these gentlemen are referencing.
I would like to add one thing that, from a taxpayer perspective, being able to share use with a civilian installation is a win for the American taxpayer, because they're not having to fund an entire base in its separate and entirety. So being able to share the same facilities helps in a lot of ways, especially when you're talking about efficiency of use. Facility. So I think it's also a bonus that probably goes unsaid many times.
And not just from a military perspective, from a commercial side too. Case in point, our emergency response vehicles.
Correct.
We share that and on standby for you, and you're on standby for us, so we have additional emergency response if there ever is a situation at our facility that wouldn't exist had we not had our partnership.
Snow clearing and that sort of thing, where we help each other, and the equipment obviously that you all have is probably going to be a lot better than what we have, but you all do an outstanding job supporting us in that. And then also with Blount County helps us with some of our road clearing as well. So it's a great community partnership.
Well, before we wrap up, is there anything that you all would like the community to know about the base? And our listeners, how can we better support you in your mission?
I'd say keep sending us great people. We have some outstanding folks that make up the membership of the 134th, and we are the community because we're an International Guard wing, and that's where we recruit from. And so I love our folks here and love where we live and the community we have, and it's phenomenal, like we talked about earlier. But please keep on sending them this way.
Amen to that. And this is a busy place. We're engaged every day. I think if one thing I'd like to know, or the listeners to know, is that for some of our people, this holds true, the 1 weekend a month, 2 weeks at annual training a year. For some, that does still hold true, but for a large majority of us, that's kind of an outdated paradigm, and this is an extremely busy place. We're not any longer a force in reserve like we used to be. We're an operational guard, and we're involved in anything that's going on around the world, and keep sending your best people. And, you know, if you want a chance at a free education, you know, the Guard pays for 4 years of college education for those who are members in good standing of the Army and Air National Guard. So,
well, and I think it's amazing. I learn every time I come over here about a new type of job or responsibility that can be found here, because it's not just military or pilot or mechanic. It's educator in your training centers. It's fire and rescue. It's engineering. It's a lot of things. So, technology you even mentioned. So it's not just that one thing. If you're interested in any type of career, you can probably find it here.
Yep.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for letting us come over and have you on our podcast. We really appreciate it.
Anytime. Glad to do it.
Thank you.
Podcast listeners, please take your seats and prepare for landing.
That was so much fun. It was really nice getting to catch up with people that we work so closely on the air show with and mm-hmm. learning more about the base. I learned some things that I've never, ever heard before.
And I always love any excuse for us to go over and visit with the 134th Air Refueling Wing we're all about. So I'm really glad that they agreed to be on our podcast. This was their first podcast, so.
You couldn't tell. Mm-hmm. They did a great job. So for our next episode, we'll be talking about economic impact and economic development and what role the airport plays in recruiting new businesses. And when a company is looking at headquartering here in our community, what role that airport plays in helping to recruit them here.
Mm-hmm. And I'm excited that we're talking about this because in previous podcast episodes, we've had Jim Evans, our air service development vice president, talking about what it takes to recruit actual airlines to come to McGee Tyson Airport and to other airports, but it's not just recruiting of those airlines. We also want businesses on our airport property as well.
Well, and surrounding the airport, which is good for everybody involved. Mm-hmm. And that can be a lot of fun.
Yes, and speaking of fun, we have had a little too much fun around the airport here these past few weeks. We actually participated in the lip sync challenge that was going around. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but some police departments were challenging each other to post lip sync videos, and our safety department actually agreed to do their own lip sync video, which
turned
shocked
out really
me.
Good. I was so thankful for them. So if they're listening, thank you.
Yes. So if you are interested in that, we did our own little take on Danger Zone, and you can find that on our YouTube channel. But it was a lot of fun, and I'm glad that it turned out as good as it did. Not that I doubted our safety officers at all and their talent.
They really are very talented. It's a very cute video, so I think you should check it out.
Yes. So thank you all so much for listening, and we hope that you will tune in to our episode next month.